Bible Worm, Bible Worm, reading the Bible with Bible Worm.
Welcome to Bible Worm, getting to the core of the biblical text. I'm Dr. Amy Robertson, Director of Lifelong Learning at Congregation Or Hadash in Sandy Springs, Georgia.
And I'm Dr. Robert Williamson, Professor of Religious Studies at Hendricks College and the founding pastor of Mercy Community Church in Little Rock. We're here every week to discuss the biblical text, both as biblical scholars and as people of faith, one Jewish and one Christian.
This week, we talk about Genesis chapter 15, God's covenant with Abraham and their relationship more generally. We talk about the honest, holy mess of it all, the sussing each other out, and the early days in a relationship when everything feels a little bit fragile and trust goes an especially long way. We talk about waiting and the anxiety of waiting when we don't have access to the full plan. And we talk a surprising amount about the time-space continuum and how Abraham, God, and even Bible Worm fit into it. I hope you enjoy. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Amy. How are you this week?
It is very early.
You know, I don't like it when we talk about that. Because what
if
somebody's listening
to
this at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon and they're like, it's not early? It ruins the illusion.
That we're recording outside of time.
Yeah, that we exist in all times and spaces on our podcast.
Do.
We are the Bible Worm, man. We're not confined by time.
The eternal worm.
It is early.
It is early.
It is so late.
I think people can tell, though, because our voices are
It's just like
funny.
The middle of the afternoon, and it's great.
Okay, hi, everybody. We exist outside of time, studying the biblical text, which also exists outside of time. Oh, my goodness. This morning, we are reading Genesis chapter 15. We skipped a bit. As we do... In the Hebrew Bible, we skipped from the second account of creation all the way to Genesis 15.
The narrative lectionary moves in the fall, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does. And so one of our tasks always when we do that is to look back at what we've skipped over and try to pull out what we think is important for our listeners to know before we head into this text. And this text that we're looking at is about Abraham and his covenant with God. But it's not the first time this covenant has come up. So before we get into this, let's talk a little bit about Abraham and about the covenant as it has unfolded in the chapters before chapter 15.
So where I would start is Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. What has happened in Genesis chapter 1 through 11, kind of in shorthand, is God has been trying to figure out how to work with humanity, and that relationship has been tense. So we talked last time about what happens in the garden with the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. Then in chapter 6 to 9, God decides to destroy people with a flood because they're wicked. Then in chapter 11, people build a tower up to heaven, and God comes down and says, nope, no towers for you,
and tears down
the tower. And so the shift in chapter 12, I've always thought of as kind of God is like working with the reality of what God has in humankind and has sort of said, okay, it doesn't work for me to try to work with all of humankind at once. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose this one person, Abraham, and his descendants.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I'm going to bless the world. So God blesses Abraham so that Abraham and his descendants can be a blessing to the world. And so it's this sort of redirection for God. It's like God has a new strategy about how to work with humankind.
I really like that. It's like the lower your expectations a little bit there.
Yeah.
Lower your expectations.
No, I really think that's kind of it. And so that happens in Genesis chapter 12. God says, okay, Abraham, you've never met me before, but I'm going to make a promise to you that I'm going to give you land and I'm going to give you numerous descendants, which of course is a tension in the text because Abraham and Sarah, his wife, are both quite old and beyond the age of having children. And so a lot of what animates chapters 12 to 24 is how are these two going to have a child that fulfills the promise?
Yeah, I would go as far as to say that is the primary drama unfolding at this point, is this question of descendants for Abraham and land for Abraham. But if he has land without descendants, then that doesn't really go anywhere.
Right.
with all of that, ta-da, here we are in chapter 15.
Chapter 15.
So we will start with chapter 15, verses 1 through 3. Sometime later, the word of the Lord came to Avram in a vision. He said, "Fear not, Avram, I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." But Avram said, "O Lord God, what can you give me, seeing that I shall die childless, and the one in charge of my household is Damasek Eliezer?" Avram said further, "Since you have granted me no offspring, my steward will be my heir." My first question for you, Bobby, is an impossible question. You ready? Those are the best questions.
I am ready.
What would prompt God to say this at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, so God has shown up to Abram several times already, and most importantly back in chapter 12, and sort of already made this promise. And so God, you're right, sort of unbidden. It's not that the text tells us Abraham is getting nervous, and so God shows up and says, "Don't be afraid." It's God shows up and says, "Don't be afraid." It is an impossible question, but I think it's also a really rich one in the sense that, you know, I mean, I think there maybe is just something here about the natural tendency of people to live in a state of anxiety. And it turns out as soon as God says, "Hey, don't be afraid," Abram then is like, "Look, here's what I'm afraid about."
That's true.
So he was kind of holding it. He had it in him. And God sort of said, you know, I'm going to pre-assure you.
Yeah.
And then we'll sort of see where that goes. So I mean, I really like that God is sort of on top of human nature, or insightful enough about Abram at least to say, "Hey, don't be afraid. It's going to be okay." Like there has been already, as we see in these verses, some delay. We don't really quite know how long, but it's been a little while. And that sort of need for God to reassure seems really, seems important. And it also seems like, if you're thinking about like, what is God like? I think that's kind of a nice portrayal of God, who sort of recognizes anxiety and tries to intervene in the process of human anxiousness. What do you think about that?
No, you know, I really like your response, because my question was sort of, what has happened that prompted this, or what has changed? But I think what you're saying is almost more true to human experience, is that precisely nothing happened.
Yeah.
What happened is it's been like 10 years.
Yeah.
Or some, I mean, we don't know exactly how long, but some time has passed and God keeps reiterating this promise.
Right.
And it keeps not happening.
Right.
There does not seem to be any progress toward this end.
That's right.
And so that is the anxiety provoking thing in a lot of our lives.
I think that's right. And it's so interesting. I mean, one of the places where, you know, there is this promise of land and progeny, and that remains unfulfilled. And the sort of the enemy of land and progeny is the barrenness, for lack of a better term, of Sarai. That's what Abram can see. But in fact, God has been, you know, enriching him this whole, like, there have been blessings upon blessings happening in the chapters between 12 and 15 that are sort of markers of the promise, even though they're not the actual thing that has been promised. And Abram could see what God has been doing and say, "Okay, God has been doing these things. I'm going to trust that." But he's so sort of focused on, "No, this is the thing that this is how I'll know I'm blessed. And I'm not blessed that way yet."
Right.
So anxiety about the barrenness overcomes the mini fulfillments, the little gestures toward the fulfillment of the promise.
And I think it also underscores just how important lineage for, you know, descendants were. For many of us still today, it is really a central sort of issue on our minds and on our hearts. And certainly in the biblical period, like this was, that, you know, in texts around this time, there's not really talk about having an eternal soul. Like your connection to eternity was achieved through descendants.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having all this wealth is lovely, and even having a personal relationship with the divine is great, but you are temporary if you don't have descendants.
I really love that. So the wealth that has been accumulated, while it is a sign of God's blessing, it is not itself. Like, it is sort of like Ecclesiastes says, it's hevel, it blows, it will blow away after your death and have signified nothing. And so the heir is the thing that makes the other blessings durable, long-lasting.
Right, mm-hmm. right, yeah.
That's really well said. So I like that, too, because it makes Abram, instead of just being like a little nervous Nelly, he's a little bit like, yeah, okay, you've done some stuff, but like this stuff is not going to secure my legacy. This is a text about legacy building, and Abram is nervous about that. Yeah. God introduces God's self to Abram here as, I am your shield, which mm-hmm. is kind of an interesting, like, I have lots of metaphors in my head for God, but shield is not really one of my go-tos. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, do you think that's significant, or what would you do with that sort of the shieldiness of God in this text?
You know, that's a good question. And my first read of it, honestly, was almost like, while God has correctly understood that there is anxiety in this moment, and so reaching out is what Avram needs, in some ways it seems like a misinterpretation of what the anxiety is about. Mm. Like, he's not worried about attack. He doesn't need a shield.
I like that a lot, because it explains then, like, when God says, I'm your shield, what Abram comes back in verse 2 is like, what are you going to give me? Like, I don't need your protection.
A shield. Yeah.
I need your gift. I need the gifting God, not the shielding God. So what you got? And I like that a lot. I think that makes sense. And, you know, one of the things that I think is true in the Abraham stories in general is that there really is this kind of back and forth between God and Abraham in this really interesting way.
Yes.
Where God tries to do right by Abraham, but Abraham has to insist on some things in order to get it moving in the right direction. And mm-hmm. I really love that interpretation that you offered there.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, Avram really pushes back, you know, and we'll talk more about sort of maybe the relationship of faith and pushing later. But Avram doesn't say here, you promised progeny, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Which might have been a more direct way to say it.
Yeah.
He just says, since you have granted me no offspring.
Yeah.
Which is pretty pointed,
you
know, and seems to indicate that he's not believing this promise.
Yeah, he's ready to see something tangible.
Yeah.
And he has not yet seen anything tangible. This thing of, well, my heir is going to be this guy who lives in my house who has no relationship mm-hmm. to me. Mm-hmm. And so how is that helpful? How is that a fulfillment?
Right.
And I've always been curious whether, you know, that would be a sort of legitimate reading of God's promise from chapters 12 and 13. You know, maybe Abram's fear is, okay, God is working some kind of loophole where when he says offspring, he really means sort of this legal continuation, which is not biological continuation. And so one of the things that happens here is, by the end of this little text unit in verse 4, which you haven't gotten to yet, Abram's actually going to force God to be more precise in mm-hmm. the promise, which I think is kind of an interesting move on Abram's part.
That's right. I want it in writing. He does sort of get it in the biblical version of writing by cutting animals in half, but we're not going to go into that part today.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to go on now to verses 4 and 5. The word of the Lord came to him in reply, that one shall not be your heir. None but your very own issue shall be your heir. He took him outside and said, look toward heaven and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he added, so shall your offspring be.
You know, one of the things, so I live in downtown Little Rock. When I think about looking at the stars, like, you can't super see the stars in downtown Little Rock because there's so much light pollution. And so in some ways, I think that you know, at least for a city dweller like me, the sort of the effect of this promise can be a little muted. But my wife and I were up in South Dakota in the Badlands a couple years ago. There's no light anywhere around. And so we went out at night and just looked up. And when there is no light anywhere around, that is really a profound, you can see the Milky Way and all of these, like, it is just like the whole sky is kind of lit up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a really remarkable thing to say, your offspring are going to be like all of those stars that are in the sky.
Yeah, it really is an awe-inspiring image, you mm-hmm. know, that's being given here to Abraham. And previously, his offspring had been compared to the sand, which is, Also big, but like less awe-inspiring.
Yeah, you can't really
see, you can't really, I don't know. I think the stars are a little more compelling.
Yeah, for sure.
I wouldn't go for stars for my offspring.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I love about that is Abraham has just been, in the previous verse, wishing for one descendant. Like he just needs one person, one son to carry on his legacy. And God says, no. Like you're thinking too small. Mm-hmm. And here, let me show you what it's really going to be like. I mean, God has made this transition from "I'm your shield, don't be so worried," to "Oh, I see what you're worried about. Let me show it to you in a different kind of way. Here mm-hmm. it is." Mm-hmm. And I just think that like God's response there, I think is really beautiful. From and in that sense, not quite getting what Abram's upset about, to suddenly being like, "Oh, let me raise your expectations now to this amazing level."
Yeah, and it's pretty incredible that Abraham has raised his anxiety, and that his anxiety is sort of questioning whether God is really going to keep God's promise that was initially given. And the response is so overwhelmingly, profoundly, like, huge and comforting. And I mean, it's like the fantasy of every anxious person in the world. Like, this is the response you want.
Yeah.
Why don't we get that response more often, Bobby?
I know. It's like when we first started Bible Worm and we were like, I hope, like, maybe my mom will listen. Although I don't think my mom actually listens to
my mom doesn't listen
to the
either,
podcast.
No. But, my mom doesn't
listen. You know, that was kind of our level of hope. And then, you know, now Bible Worm listeners are, they're not like the stars of the sky, but they're like, they're maybe like the stars of the sky that you could see from downtown Little Rock, like a couple,
Bobby,
a couple hundred of the brightest ones. But you know what I mean? Like our expectations were pretty low, and like they're not.
Will we get a couple? Yeah, and then there's this huge, tremendous response.
Yeah.
So
Bible Worm. One of the things that I was kind of pointing to this earlier is God here says, "No one but your very own issue," is how the NRSV translates it, "will be your heir."
Mm-hmm.
So the promise has gotten very specific, not quite specific enough, as you know, that which is where Ishmael is going to come from. But it has gotten more specific.
Right, the drama continues, but it has gotten more specific.
Yeah, and I'm just curious what you think about that sort of, I don't know if Abraham forced God to be more specific or God responded by being more specific, but the scope of the possible fulfillments of this promise have gotten more narrow.
Yeah, I mean, it is just in terms of sort of like the literary development of the story, it's just a great story. Like the way that the drama unfolds and how it narrows a bit at this point. And then you're right, in the next chapter plays exactly on what ambiguity is left.
Yeah.
You know, now we know that the child will come from Abraham, but we don't know who the mother of the child will be. And then you know, that sort of resolves over time, too. So, yeah, the question of who is going to be the next in this chain still, like, I mean, at this point, reading the text, we might think, great, now it's been settled. But it hasn't quite been settled yet.
Yeah.
The text is
and it's so interesting that the degree to which sort of Abram's anxiety about fulfillment continues to motivate the text going forward until Isaac is born. And I mean, maybe even after Isaac is born.
Yeah, when Abraham almost kills him on the mountain.
Yeah. And so there's something in this text. Like, I think that there's I get a sense in this text where God is like, come on, could you just trust me a little bit? And Abram is sort of in this position of, I need more specifics in order to trust. And maybe there's this kind of sort of fundamental tension between Abram and God on this level, which I think maybe is true often of people of faith as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're sort of, Abram's forcing God to be more specific. God is forcing Abram to be a little more trusting. And there's this kind of interesting dynamic between these two.
Okay. And because Avram put Avram's trust in the Lord reckoned it to Avram's merit.
Yeah. The New Revised Standard Version, which I think is probably more familiar to translation to Christian listeners, and he believed the Lord. That's Avram believed the Lord. And the Lord reckoned it to him as righteousness. So that word righteousness and merit, those sound really different, at least to my religiously trained ears, exactly what God is. And reckoned it to him. Like, I don't use that. Like, I'm from South Carolina, and so the only way I really use reckon is when somebody says, do you want to do this? And I'm like, well, I reckon, which means like, yeah, I do, but I, like, I'm kind of noncommittal about it. But that's not what this,
yeah,
that's not what this really means. Can you just like, I mean, I'm not looking for like deep theological interpretation at this moment, but just like, what does that mean? What was your translation again? Mine is reckoned it to him as righteousness. Yours is?
Reckoned it to his merit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because you're right. Those do, I don't have Protestant ears, but those sound really different to English-speaking ears.
Yeah.
And also, in the Jewish tradition, there is a sense of things being granted sort of on the merit of our forefathers. So, like, the word merit has more, has sort of deeper roots, longer legs. I don't know. Within the Jewish tradition, that might be akin to sort of what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Righteousness.
Can you just, I love that. Can you just work that out a little more? Like, I mean, I think I know what you're saying, but can you just talk a little bit more about what that means, that the merit of the ancestors?
I mean, I think the idea here is that, you know, to say that this was reckoned to Avram's merit is sort of like, it reminds me sort of the idea of, you know, when you're building relationships with people and you do things to sort of build your social capital, like you show your faithfulness, you show the ways in which you are going to participate in a positive way in this relationship. And then if something happens that's not so good later, hopefully you've built up enough trust over time, like you've built up enough social capital in the human world that you can draw on that. Like you have a deep enough foundation of trust and positive relationship. And so the idea in the Jewish tradition of something being based on the merit of our ancestors is that this pool that we can pull from is not only in our own lives. Like, it's this intergenerational pool. And this is, like, the first deposit. Like, this is the first time the text tells us that, like, Avram was able to believe this promise, even though he's still, I mean, so God showed him some stars. Like, that's still not really, you know, like, that's nice. God said some nice things, but it's not like God was like, okay, ta-da, Sarah's pregnant.
Right.
But Avram was willing to go with it.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to do. And so the fact that he was willing to go with it sort of goes into this pool of like positive relationship, social capital. That sounds like such a gross term. But for all the generations of Jewish people, not just for Avram.
I love that. And the word there, believed, Abraham believed the Lord. Is it believed in the NJPS or is it trusted?
It's because he put his trust in the Lord.
Yeah, the word there is he'emin, which really I think is better translated as because he trusted.
Mm-hmm.
It's Abraham agreed to live his life into this promise that has been given to him, mm-hmm. even though he doesn't have any direct evidence of it yet. And so there's this trusting that God's going to do what God says God is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So Abraham believes, and God says, okay, I'm going to credit that to you as righteousness mm-hmm. or as merit. So it's like, to me, the accrediting or the reckoning is important because it's not exactly that Abraham has done something meritorious or done something mm-hmm. righteous that then he gets that like checked off. It's that he's done this one thing, which is trust. And God says, okay, I'm going to put that in the righteousness mm-hmm. account or in the merit account, even though that's not exactly what it was. And so in the Protestant tradition, and I mean all the way back to Paul in the New Testament tradition, this text there's a sense that God has given something to Abraham, has accredited something to Abraham that has not been earned exactly by Abraham. God's kind of done a little like magic on the books. Or like said, I'll take this one mm-hmm. thing that you've given to me and I'll consider it to be something else. And that becomes really important in the Christian tradition because then you get into the position of even though people may not be able to follow God in exactly the way God would like to be followed, God can take other things and attribute them to us as positive things, as righteousness.
That's so interesting because I mean, what would Avram, what could he do? Like, what would be a thing that he would do in response to that statement besides say, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I think, no, that's a fair question. And I think that he could just trust and God says, okay, you're trusting, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But God says, okay, this trusting that you're doing, I'm going to account for it as righteousness.
I see. So if there's an assumption that righteousness implies action, then this is saying righteousness does not have to imply action.
Yeah.
Righteousness can be faith.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, one could read this text and say, well, Abraham, you know, mostly has been doubting and questioning God, which is not a righteous thing to do. Mm-hmm. And this act of saying, like, okay, well, like, I'll go with it for now, may not necessarily seem all that profound, but God chooses to encounter it as profound and to say, okay, I'm going to take this thing that you, the thing that you have mustered, I'm going to take that and I'm going to receive it as though it is this righteousness that I've desired.
Yeah, no, I like that in part, like in response to my own question before, like what else could Abraham have done? And I think that's part of the question. Like there's nothing else for him to have done.
Yeah.
Like what is he going to, there's nothing for him to do. Like, yeah, which is again, like part of the challenge of the anxious human experience. Like there's nothing actually to do.
Like the exact problem is God is doing things in God's own time and Abram needs to not try to get ahead of the game. And just let God work. And so there's nothing to be done. There's trust to be trusted. There is not action to be acted.
Yeah.
The one other thing, and I think your sort of conversation about merit probably gets at this, the idea of righteousness sounds really pious, I think, to contemporary ears, like it's a religious category. But I think the idea here of tzedakah, as it's being used in this text, is more relational. So it's about doing the things to be in proper relationship. And it could be used of being in proper relationship with another human being. So it sounds weird for me to say, like, I feel as though you have acted righteously toward me, Amy. Like, that sound weird?
That'd be weird. Don't say that. That's weird.
I immediately regretted it. It sounds weird. But in the Hebrew context, you could say that in ancient Israel. Like, we have a righteous relationship, which means our relationship is, like, it is enacted rightly. And so this thing that is imputed to Abraham here is not a specifically religious thing. It's not something that can be done only toward God. So it's not exactly piety. It's about, I will consider this as though our relationship is going as it should, or like, I will consider it as though you have acted rightly by me. And I don't know that really matters, but the relationality of it seems important.
No, you're right. And the word righteous has this connotation of like you're responding to like these abstract, absolute principles or, you know, actions. But you're right. The sort of that softer edge of it that comes in relationship to a person or to God does seem really important here. It's not sort of a measure of Avram as in some like abstract, absolute scale. It's, I like that a lot. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, friend. We have come to the end of our conversation where we step back and ponder what this might mean for our communities today. So as you think about this text, what would you offer?
Yeah, I want to go all the way back to where we started with chapter 15, which was this kind of the anxiety that Abraham is experiencing, that God seems to understand that that's human nature by now, that human beings are anxious creatures. I think that's important both to say that the nature of humankind and the nature of many of us as individuals is to live in a world of anxiety between the fulfillments of promises that we expect and hope for and the outcome of those events. So we live in a tension of promise that is as yet unfulfilled. And I think that happens on all kinds of levels, both kind of these, you know, personal levels in our own lives, but also in the big picture, sort of waiting for, like, there's always a sense that someday the world is going to be right, and it is never quite right. I really loved what you were saying, though, about how that sort of the shield metaphor, like God gets that Abram is anxious, but he doesn't quite get what Abram is anxious about. And so there has to be this back and forth where God says, I think you're anxious because maybe you're going to get attacked. And Abram's like, no, I'm anxious because this promise that you made me hasn't come true yet. And I love that sort of dynamic relationship where, you know, the way I read it is God is trying to sort of unbidden make things better, but God is a little bit amiss. And so it requires this response from Abram that then gets a response from God. And you get the dynamic sense of a covenanted relationship in which God and Abram, and by way of that, God and us, are kind of in this back and forth. And, you know, one could read Abram as being pretty full of doubt here. Like, this is pretty direct.
It sure is.
Say,
yeah, I'm sad about that.
You made me this
that.
Promise, and it's not going to come true, yeah. right? And at the end of the story, God reckons it to Abraham as righteousness, which I think says something about, like, the desire of God to kind of cover over. We don't have to walk on eggshells around God, because God kind of is, at least here, assuming the best of intentions. And so when there is anxiety, when there is fear of the future, when the sort of doubts about the lack of fulfillment of the promise are the dominant thing, like, it's okay. Like, you can just sort of say that and acknowledge that, and God will kind of respond in this, like, dramatic way, and that there is a comfort that is at least being offered here to say, in fact, the promises God has made are going to be fulfilled, and so just rest into that promise. And when you cannot do that, or when you do not do that as neatly as you might like, it's okay, because God can take what we manage and muster it, can reckon it to us as righteousness. So I think, especially in this kind of time of pandemic, and everybody's, you know, we're still, many of us are worshiping at home, and we don't know how this thing's going to come to an end, and we don't know when we're going to see our faith communities or our families or our friends in sort of normal ways again. This kind of, there's a promise out there that things are going to be brought back into a sense of rightness. And just because it hasn't gotten there yet doesn't mean that it's not going to get there. To trust that that is coming, and to be okay with the anxiety of the moment.
I think that's really beautiful and important. And I love the way you tied that into the pandemic at the end, because it, I mean, on the one hand, it is, you know, really different than the particulars of the anxiety that Avram has, but we can't see how we're going to get from here to there. And I keep trying to think through what are different ways this could all play out. That's just not available to me. And so I want to say, I'll be patient, but I want to know how this is going to go down. And even in the promise, like in the comfort that Avram gets from God in this chapter, there's no, here's how this is all going to go down. It's just, look at these incredible stars. Look at the stars. That is your comfort. The reiteration of my promise and this beautiful, awe-inspiring vision. And that was enough in that moment. You know, God gave you what you needed for today.
Yeah.
You know, and you just have to sort of keep moving in that direction. I think that my closing thoughts are, again, like, really overlap a lot with yours, Bobby, focused a little bit more on this, the theme of legacy and the importance of legacy and the drive that Abraham has and that all of us have to sort of believe that our lives amount to something in a way that's a little more permanent than that seems to be the case. You know, I was listening to On Being the other day, which, as you all know, I listen to all the time. And they had an artist and a sculptor named Dario Robleto, who was talking about remembrance of things past and the role that art plays in that. And it's a beautiful episode, and you should listen to all their episodes. But what struck me the most in this was this sort of terrifying thought that even if you can accomplish sort of what Avram is asking for, the heir, right? If that's your idea of what legacy should look like and you have a child, after maybe two generations, no one's really going to remember the specifics of you. You know, like if what you're hoping is that someone will remember the details of your life or remember something about your personality or your preferences, that doesn't travel too far into the future anyway. And it made me think, a lot of depressing thoughts. No, it made me think of this piece of liturgy from the High Holy Days. And we read about Abraham over the High Holy Days. And it refers to God as HaZocher Kol HaNishkachot, the one who remembers all that has been forgotten. And it just reminds me sort of as this tension you're talking about, like God lives in eternity, in eternal time. And so it makes sense in some ways that God wouldn't, it wouldn't occur to God that what Abraham's most afraid of is this heir thing, you know? That is the thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. We really, I still am stuck on that line from Kohelet that we talked about back in the summertime, that eternity is in the minds of humans, yeah. but we can't quite grapple with it. We can't get rid of it, but we can't understand it. And so at some point, we have to trust that God has got that peace so that we can go on with our lives. But the back and forth between God and Avram here, I think, is really yeah. important, because they need to understand, if we're going to be in relationship,
yeah.
you know, we need to understand more about each other and the scale on which we exist.
I really love that. And, you know, that I think you're naming sort of what is a fundamental human anxiety about legacy in some form or another. Like what mm-hmm. in what way is my life going to have had meaning? And that promise that in some way it's going to all be pulled together in the big scope of things, so that we will have mattered in the big picture, and that we will have been remembered in the mind of God. I really love that.
This chapter, as it unfolds past these verses, I think adds some really interesting layers to Abraham's anxiety and how much information he gets from God. And I wish in some ways we could go on to it, but...
Another time. Next week.
That will be for another episode. Another time.
Next week, we're going to be in the Joseph story in chapter 37. We're going to have missed Isaac and Jacob all together. And so we'll be in Genesis 37, mm-hmm. so sort of a smattering of verses, and then a little bit in Genesis 50. All right, Amy, I'll see you next time.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Bible Worm. If you'd like to hear the rest of our conversation about this text, join our Patreon at the Extended Worm level or higher to get access to extended episodes. You'll also find other goodies like early access, video lectures, weekly liturgies, and more, starting at just $4 per month. Visit patreon.com/BibleWormPodcast for details.
We're grateful to all our supporters for helping us keep the podcast going. A special thank you to our executive producer, Fox Valley Presbyterian Church in Geneva, Illinois, and to our newest supporters, Patty Lawrence, Ricky Turner, Catherine Neely Burton, and Joel and Sarah Nye.
Join us again next week when we'll be discussing the Joseph story. Yet more drama awaits. Until then, keep on digging.